Hello and welcome. I am Nick Hartman and I'm so excited to welcome you to this very special dropped kickoff podcast. This is going to be one of three little podcasts that we'll put out because we have had the greatest chance, an amazing opportunity to interview three global rugby superstars. These interviews are short and sweet, so we've thought we'd just send out the best man for the job, Nathan Williamson, to interview and get this. Brian O'Driscoll, Nolly Waterman, and Brian Habana. Wouldn't have been possible without the support of HSBC and Green and Gold Rugby. Thank you to both for helping sort out this amazing opportunity. And of course, thank you so much to all our guests. We've cut up all three interviews into three separate pods. This pod is the interview with Brian O'Driscoll. So without further ado, I'll just introduce Nathan and Brian. Take it away.
Hello and welcome back to a special interview on Green and Gold Rugby's The Drop Kickoff. It's an honour and privilege to welcome my special guest at this time, an Irish legend, Brian O'Driscoll. Brian, how are you?
I'm really good, Nathan. Really good, thanks. How are you?
Matt, I'm doing wonderful. I mean, it's a great weekend of rugby with sort of the Hong Kong Sevens going on. I guess let's start there. You know, Hong Kong as an event has a sort of magic behind it. What do you think makes it so special? And do you have any sort of stories or special stories about Hong Kong you can share about just what makes it so great?
I just think there's, for anyone that's been to Hong Kong at any time, there is an electricity to this city. You know, it's kind of unique. It's, you know, think about the great cities of the world. New York has an element of it, but Hong Kong just has something different. And then it feels like it's supercharged. Sevens weekend, people traveling from the southern hemisphere, from Europe, you know, all the way from America. There's reunion, school, college, there's business being done. So it just feels like there's a bit of everything here. And it's, there's so much going on that there's, you know, there's things, you know, there's fun events for kids right through to, you know, elderly people here who've been coming for 25 years. It's just there's legacy and there's history to it. And as the flagship event on this on the HSBC Seven Circuit, it's the one that all the teams really seem to focus on because, you know, it's been so hard to come by a victory here in the past that it's the one that it feels like they give that extra element of effort to try and come out as champion supreme on Sunday evening.
Of course, and I guess the big sort of talking point about this Hong Kong event in particular is Michael Hooper making the transition from 15s to 7s. I mean, as we're recording it, he's gone through two games. What was your sort of opinion on how he sort of made that leap in those first two games?
Yeah, he's been, you know, pretty effective. No shocks, you know, that he was able to, you know, convert himself from a 15s player to a very able 7s player. So come on. And you know, funny that he, you know, closed the game out with one of his now legendary steals. You know, I think it'd be a good bet for an Olympics to see if he's going to be the top man for turnovers over the course of the competition, because, you know, he's obviously made a career out of it in 15's game, and obviously there's more opportunities of it in 7's if you can get yourself from tackler into that poach position. And it, you know, the more he builds his engine, the more he builds skill set that we know that he has, the more time and he has, you know, developing partnerships with teammates, he'll get better for it. So very, very good start. And this Australian team look pretty decent fettle. So yeah, they're in good shape for now, and he's a great inclusion. Now it's not even mentioning the leadership side of things, the experience. So what a find they have in Michael Hooper.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. And it sort of continues this trend of 15 stars making that transition. You know, we've seen DuPont, Quaggart Smith in the past has done it with success. I guess throughout your career, did you ever sort of consider making that move? And what do you think makes it such a sort of difficult transition from 15s to 7s?
I think it's a very different skill set. I think obviously the engine piece and the speed repeat piece is significant. The amount of space on the field, you can never ever switch off, so you always have to be on the move. If I'm honest, I probably would have had aspirations to play over here as a teenager, and then I got capped as a 20-year-old, kind of out of the blue. And once you get capped at 15s, it's very unusual to go back and play sevens thereafter. So yeah, I guess that I missed the boat with my opportunity to come to the Hong Kong sevens. But I've really enjoyed watching for the last 10 years. I've learned a huge amount about the game. And I do think that there's, of course, there's a couple of success stories in, you know, DuPont helping France to their first series win in a long, or their first event win in a long time over North America, Quagga Smith. But there's been lots of other people that haven't managed to make the transition. You think back to 2016, Quade Cooper and Brian Nibana, who's here with me, even Sonny Bill Williams, who was probably a bit unlucky with injury in the Olympics in Rio. But you know, a number of players have liked the idea of competing for an Olympic gold medal, but it hasn't quite transpired as they would have hoped. But for those that have had the capacity to be able to swap between the two, it just shows their athletic prowess to be able to deal with the physicality of 15s, but then the versatility to be able to shift across to sevens and play seamlessly. The likes of Quagga Smith is a great example about how good he was at sevens, and he's converted that into the 15th game seamlessly.
I guess on the sevens front, obviously, we've said over the past sort of 12 to 18 months, we've seen the rise of particularly Irish sevens teams, both the men, how they sort of qualify for the Olympics, the women taking the Perth. I just want your perspective on how that's sort of grown the game back in Ireland, particularly that success in Perth, what it can do for Irish rugby and particularly Irish men's rugby.
Yeah, we took this big sabbatical from sevens, and actually it took David Nusifora to come over to the IRFU from Australia, and who's a huge sevens advocate, to restart our sevens teams and kind of reboot them. And I suppose it probably took everyone a bit by surprise about how competitive we were quite quickly. Within a couple of seasons, you know, we were getting to semi-finals of cups, particularly from a men's point of view. And then the women's victory down in Perth earlier this year, particularly beating Australia in the final, has been significant. And just talking to another journalist there a minute ago, I think in so many walks of life, you feel as though there is an imposter syndrome involved. There is a fake until you make it attitude. And then when you find yourself in circumstances and situations and you realize that, you know what, they're no different than us. Okay, they might look big on the out, they might look great on a team sheet, but actually, you know, they're made up the same way. There's just seven of them against seven of us, and you deliver performances. It just builds the confidence and it builds belief that you're able to repeat week on week. And I think that's what our men have done, particularly this season. They've been very, very consistent, you know, qualified for the Olympics again. And the jeopardy involved in sevens is what makes it really exciting, that any team can beat any other team on their day. And so that's the differentiator between 15s, World Cups, and the likes of the Olympics, is that you genuinely could have one of 10 or 12 teams that could win an Olympic gold medal, whereas in the 15s, we have four World Cup winners in nine tournaments. So, fingers crossed in the summer in Paris that Ireland will be one of the teams on the podium. We won't get greedy and demand gold, but it'll be lovely to get a medal of some colour, be it men's or women's.
Yeah, let's hope so. And you sort of talked to a guy there, David Nusifora, who's sort of helped spark that sort of revival. Another guy that sort of joined him back in Australian rugby is a guy you're familiar with, and Joe Schmidt. I mean, as an Australian, it'd be remiss of me to ask of what your thoughts on that appointment is and what he can really add to this Wallabies setup.
I think he's a great signing. Obviously, I've been coached by him provincially and then for nearly a year internationally. I think he has helped bring Ireland, you know, Irish rugby on to the next level after another previous Australian coach, Michael Checa, had come in and you know, built some incredible foundations for us from a professionalism point of view. So maybe he was the catalyst, and I think Joe just built on the qualities that were already in existence. I think he's a great signing for Australia. He will bring structure. He will demand very high standards. And with a smart rugby nation that Australia always are, I think he's a perfect coach to be able to bring the best out of them. I think Australia have always been a really thinking man's team, and they just maybe lost a little bit of confidence, a little bit of self-belief, and you know, rugby probably hasn't been as much of a focus in, you know, from a national perspective in Australia, as it has been in the past, well, is his opportunity to bring that excitement back to the crowd and that expectation, that belief that they can compete consistently at a very, very high level. And I think it's brilliant for the Lions Tour and coming next year that, you know, it's current Irish coach Andy Farrell against previous Irish coach Joe Schmidt in coaching two different sides. I think it's going to be built up brilliantly, and I think Joe will make Australia far more competitive very, very quickly.
One of the things that stood out about Joe is he did a press conference a couple of weeks ago, and it was out of Darling Harbour, and every sort of Irish person that stopped by was so sort of in awe of him. They were wanting to take photos of him. They just absolutely loved him. What kind of a sort of culture guy is he in terms of not only getting players to believe in him, but getting an entire nation to rally behind him and eventually deliver the results that's expected of an Australian side?
Well, I think the challenge in Australia is always going to be that, you know, winning is the expectation. You know, not valiant losers in finals. It's about, you know, one World Cup, so that's the standard. I guess in Ireland, you know, in Joe's tenure, you know, we were more hopeful than expectant. And I think that attitude has changed in recent times with the work that he's done and what Andy Farrell has built on top of it. But there's no doubt that he's held in very, very high esteem in Ireland with the success that he had, you know, winning a couple of European Cups with Leinster, going on and winning you know, a Grand Slam and multiple Six Nations Championships with Ireland, beating the All Blacks on multiple occasions, so for the first time. So he ticked an awful lot of firsts with being consistent performers, which has been probably a struggle of Ireland, you know, for a long, long time. So all you can hope for in any coach is to bring that level of consistency and that expectation that you believe in yourself first and foremost, and then subsequently the supporter base get behind you, and then they start believing in you too.
That's wonderful news to hear. I know I haven't got you for long, so just one final question. You're here with HSBC. I just want to know, how's that sort of involvement in Sevens really sort of helping grow the game and also grow sort of participation and offer opportunities to all walks of life that want to play rugby?
I think there's so many folks and initiatives across the globe. But one thing that they're doing brilliantly well, particularly here in Hong Kong, is this Try Rugby campaign where, you know, they're trying to get into, I think they're into over 50% of primary schools where they've certified PE teachers to be able to show their, you know, the kids that have never picked up a rugby ball before, the values, you know, the culture involved in rugby, the camaraderie, the friendships that can be developed, and give them the love for the sport that has been very good to me and that so many people get to enjoy. And I think a sport like rugby always has to be keeping one eye on the future. It's not going to naturally happen itself. We always have to work on it, getting new eyeballs, getting new participation levels. And I definitely feel as though Sevens is the access point to it really being a global game, particularly with it being in the Olympics. So, I think those sort of initiatives are all important, that you never sit in your laurels and think, oh, we've got this cracked, but you're always looking at and trying to expand and grow and evolve and change at the perception of rugby.
What a wonderful way to end. Thank you so much for coming on, sharing the time instead of coming on the Drop Kickoff.
Cheers, man. Thanks a lot.
So that was Brian O'Driscoll. That was great chat, Nathan. Really interesting stuff. Great to also hear what HSBC are doing with growing the game around the world. We have two other podcasts out, if you'd like to listen to them, with Nolly Waterman and Brian Abana. Again, those will be two separate podcasts. Hope you can jump on and listen to those two. Until then, catch you later.